The last section of the Kinot are what are known as the Tzionim, or the Zionites, and again the theme or the mode of the Kinot changes quite significantly. Till now we've been talking about the destruction either of Yerushalayim or the destruction of Jewish communities. Now we're talking actually about the beauty of Yerushalayim. That Rav Soloveitchik makes the observation that you can't properly mourn for something unless you know what it was really like and you remember it in its best sense. That sometimes, that you know, in a pastoral context, I find people, they're sitting shiva for a departed parent. The parent has been very, very ill for, you know, a number of years, and, you know, their mourning isn't as acute as it might be, because the memories that they have are of an ill person rather than a well person. And to be able to properly mourn in the fullest sense for a person, you need to be able to remember them in their vibrancy. And what we have now is the last stage of the Kinot, which describe Yerushalayim in its vibrancy. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi is the first of the Paitanim in that regard. We'll read shortly Tzion Halot Ishali. And others followed in his footsteps and in his model. What I want to do is spend a little bit of time thinking about how we remember Yerushalayim and two models of remembering Yerushalayim. So I want to start off with a sugya at the end of the third parak of Masechet Bava Batra. Parts of it are possibly quite familiar to people. It's Gemara Batra, Bava Batra, Samach Amud Bet. It's on page 18 in the Kuntras. Tanu Rabbanan. So we have a brighter. Shecharav HaBayit Bashnia. When the second Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, Rabu Perushin B'Yisrael. There were many people amongst the Jewish people who wanted to be very very extreme in their mourning customs. They decided shelo lechol basav, shelo lishtot yayin. They would never eat meat and never drink wine. How can they eat meat and drink wine when the Beit HaMikdash has been destroyed? Nitbal lehen Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Yoshua engaged with them, amar lehen, and he said to them, Banai, my children, mipnei mai atem ochlim basav, ein atem shotim yayin. Why are you not eating wine, meat, or drinking wine? Amru lo, they said to him, Nochal basar shimenu makrivin al gabei mizbeach. Should we eat meat which used to be offered up on the mizbeach? V'achshav batel. Now there's no mizbeach to offer up meat. Nishte yayin shemanachskin al gabei hamizbeach. V'achshav batel. Should we drink wine that once upon a time was poured on the mizbeach, and now that doesn't happen any longer? Meaning that the mizbeach can't eat meat and drink wine. Why should we be able to eat meat and drink wine? Amar lahem, he said to them, Im kein lechem lo nochal. That's the case, you shouldn't eat bread. Shekvar batlu menachot, because there are no meal offerings offered up on the mizbeach any longer. As an aside, the Vilna Gaon points out that our minhag of not eating meat and drinking wine during the 9 days is an extension of this, meaning that ideally we would never eat meat or drink wine. That's not realistic, so at least during the 9 days we don't do that. Anyhow, Rabbi Yoshua said to them that, you shouldn't eat bread. So they said, Taki, you're right, Efshar b'feirot, but you know what, we can eat fruit. So peirot lo nochal. He said, no, you can't eat fruit either. Shekvar batlu bikurim, because the fruit were brought as the bikurim to the Beit HaMikdash. There's no bikurim brought any longer. If the Mizbeach isn't getting grapes and pomegranates and olives, why should you get grapes and olives and pomegranates? So Efshar b'feirot acherim. So they said, okay, well, they're the fruits that aren't offered up in the bikurim. We can have mangoes and tangerines and apples. They weren't offered up, Jaffa oranges, they weren't offered up in the Bikurim, so we can eat those. So, okay, so you can eat those, but Maim lo nishter, don't drink water. Shekvar batel nisuch hamayim, because there's no water libations poured on the mizbeach, that doesn't happen any longer. So you shouldn't drink water. Shatku, so it was science, they were challenged. Amalahen, so he said to them, Bana'ai, my sons, Bo'uvo Melachem, listen, I'll tell you something. Shelol Hidabel Kol Ikari Efshar, not to mourn at all is impossible, Shekvar Nigzara Gzeira, because the Gzeira has already been decreed. Ula Hidabel Yoteh Midai Efshar, and to mourn too much is impossible, Shein Gozrin Gzeira Alat Tibor, Elen Kim Rov Hat Tibor Yicholin La Modba. That is, you never make a Gzeira on the community unless most people can withstand that Gzeira, share for another time. But, you know, all sorts of Gzeiras that you could make, but, you know, can people live up to it? And we've got a pasuk diktiv ba meira atem ne'arim voti atem kovim hagoy kulo. El akach amru chachamim, but this is what chachamim said. Sadadim et beito basid. So when a person builds his house, he should cover it with lime. Umeshayeb or davar muat, but leave a little bit of the house undecorated. The kama, how much is that? Amar Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef said, Amar al Amar. A square amma, one amma by one amma, you should leave undecorated. Amma Rav Chista said, Keneged HaPetach, and it should be opposite the door, so that when you're sitting at the table, you can see it above the door. Ose Adam called Torche Suda, and when a person makes a banquet, he should have all the dishes on the table, Umushayed Davar Muat, but leave out one small serving. Maihi, what is that? Amar of Papa, Kasa Daharsana. It's the Kasa Daharsana, it's sort of fish paste or something like that. You can serve the roast lamb and the roast beef and the stuffed carp and the potatoes and the vegetables and the towers of courgettes and the mushroom vol-au-vents and all these things. But leave something missing. For the gefilte fish, don't have the chrein on the table. Also, Aisha called Tachshita, a woman can put on all her jewellery, all her adornments, Mesheret Davar Muat, leave a little bit of herself unadorned. Maihi, what's that, Amarav? Rav said, Batsada'a, just the hair at the temples, which she would usually shave, to look even more beautiful, leave that looking a bit messy. Shenemar, what's our source text for all this? The pasuk that we're all familiar with, if I forget you, O Yerushalayim, then my right hand should forget its coming. Mayal Rosh Simchati, what does it mean? Im lo alet Yerushalayim Rosh Simchati, if I do not promote Yerushalayim or elevate Yerushalayim over all my rejoicing. Amar Rav Yitzchak Zeh Efem Makleshem Rosh Chatanim. This is the ashes that are put on the head of a chatan. Okay, there's Amalei Rav Papa, Abayim Rav Papa said to Abaye, Heicha Manachla, where should these ashes be placed? That Makom Tefillin should be placed where the Tefillin go. Shenema, we've got a pasuk, Lavelation, Latet Lahem Pe'er Tachat Efer. That's ultimately the Avelation should get Pe'er, a decoration, the Tefillin shall rosh in place of the Efer, in place of the ashes that are now there. This is minhag that some people are familiar with, that's before the chuppah, Masadei Kiddushin puts efer, that's ashes on the heads of the head of the chatan, and then brushes them off. Gave this shir elsewhere recently, told the story. I remember when I was in yeshiva, Rav Lichtenstein Zichron Olav Racha, he was always very makpid on this, one time it was at a hotel in Yerushalayim, and sitting, filling in the ketubah, and a waiter went past, and he said to the waiter, you know, can you bring me an ashtray? So the waiter brought him an ashtray, and Rav Lichtenstein looked at it and said, no, I want a full one, not an empty one. That's the waiter looked at him and he was nuts. That's who wants a dirty ashtray? He wanted to take the ash out of the ashtray to put on the head of the chatan. When I got married, that was what the Masadei Kiddushin did for me. That's for Chol HaMitabel al Yerushalayim Zochevro Ebetim Chata. Anybody who mourns appropriately for Yerushalayim will merit in the future to participate in its rejoicing. Shenehemar, as the pasuk says, Timchuet Yerushalayim V'giluva Kol Ohaveha. That, so we have here in this sugya a number of practices which were instituted, Zeichel Churban, so that we should remember the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. Some of them we're very familiar with, and some of them seem to have been lost over the course of time. If we look in the Shulchan Aruch tells us ושחרב בית המקדש תקנו חכמים שהיו באותו הדור שאין בונים לעולם בניין מסויד ומחייר כבניין המלאכים. So Chazal decided one should never build a palatial building. And atach beit or betit v'sad besid, you build your house and you put the cement on the walls and you put the sid, the limestone on it. U'mishayem kom amal amah keneged ha-petach b'losid. But you leave an area amal b'amah without it properly being decorated. V'alokeh chatzer mesuyedet u'mukhiyeret. Now what if you buy a home which has already been decorated? So we've seen that was built by a goy. They don't have a mitzvah of zeicher l'churban, so you don't need to worry about it. So you don't have to tear down some or take off some of the wallpaper or something like that. The question is, why is it nowadays so few people do zeicher l'churban in their home? So I know we've got a few members who have got that up. If I were to ask for a show of hands, I won't. If I were to ask for a show of hands, I suspect that most people don't have Churban Labai, Zeichel Churban, at home. So why not? So the Mishnah Brura that says, Yesh Mekilin al Dei Chol, Disrula de Hecha de Eruv Chol, Shuv Lo Mikre B'Shem Sid. So it says some people are making, seeing as the sid, the lime that's put on the walls isn't high quality lime, it's not really bright, it's mixed with sand, so then it's not, you haven't decorated your house really well. But he says, and that doesn't really work, because, we do decorate our houses beautifully. So why do people not do it? And that's, he says, the penultimate line, just at the end, Sarachin al-Manogin Heta. So we're not really sure why people don't do it. So it's interesting on many levels, in the sense that Mishnah Brura is giving testimony. We have this, rose-tinted vision of Jewry in Radin, that's pre-war, that everybody was from and everybody did everything exactly by the book. It seems lots of people didn't have Zeichel Churban in their homes. That was the minhag. People didn't do it. He's not quite sure why not. Rav Moshe Sternbach in a tshuva, I've got here from Tshuva Banagot, we won't go through it inside, but again, if people want to during the course of the afternoon. He says, in actual fact, it's a bit of a chiddush he has, but he's machadesh, there's a notion of that zeichel churban, where you have to leave an area undecorated, but even if you're not leaving it undecorated, you move into a place which has been decorated, so particularly if you live in Yerushalayim, so you need to put something there, zeichel churban. You should hang something up, a back cloth or a sign, saying Zeichel Churban, you should always have in your home something which is Zeichel Churban. You can now get in Israel, it's one of these sort of paradoxical things, you can buy these beautiful silver decorations that go on the wall. It's like the tzedakah boxes, spend £300 on a silver tzedakah box to collect £25 to give to the poor. So that's instead of decorating, instead of leaving an area of your house undecorated, spend a few hundred pounds on a beautiful, glass and silver Zeichel Churban sign, to remind you of the Churban. But certainly he seems to indicate that one should have something there, which is Zeichel Churban. Now if you turn over the page, we've got some pictures now for people who are getting tired. So the Shulchan Aruch talks about leaving something missing from the table when you lay the table. We don't do that, even at a fancy simcha. It's not clear that there's anything missing. The Aruch HaShulchan says, because nowadays we don't have such a formalized menu. So, there's no crane on the table, so nobody will notice there's no crane on the table. Or there was no soy sauce, you don't notice these things because you're not necessarily expecting it. So therefore, you can't have something, you don't put out the after eights together with the petty fours at the end. So fine, they didn't have after eights because there wasn't an extra on them or something like that. Now, if anybody's read the book, All for the Boss, so in there he says that when he made a wedding for his daughter, on the menu, on the tables, it said, whatever is not being served, Zeichel Churban. So people who are going to be making weddings, maybe this is something to think about. And then we have the Shulchan Aruch mentions about women not putting on all their jewelries at one time. And then fourth line down, the Shulchan Aruch says, when a person gets married, lokach efem makle, the person that you take ashes, v'notein baroshon, you put it on the chatan's head, v'makom hanachat tefillin, where we put the tefillin. And then the Rama says, yesh mekomot shenagu l'shaber kos b'shat chupa. There are places where the minhag is to break a glass. So, interesting lashon here. Some places have this minhag, not universal. That if we went to a wedding, and under the chuppah, they forgot to break the glass, somebody would come running up to the Masadeh Kiddushin, that's to say, you forgot something. No, it's not a universal minhag. I was once at a wedding where the Masadeh Kiddushin, he remembered to break the glass, but he forgot the Chatsheva Brachot. Right? So that's, I don't usually like to interfere with other Rabbonim when they're, you know, being Masadeh Kiddushin. But I felt on that occasion I should pull him up. He'd forgotten about the Sheva Brachot, gone straight to the breaking of the glass. It's not a universal minhag. It wasn't a universal minhag. The Rama says, you break glass, or lasum mapash chorah shachatar divrei aveilut rosh chatan, or you put a black cloth on or something like that on the head of the chatan. You know, all sorts of different things that you can do. Cholei la'advarim kedelis korech yushalayim shenemarim afkeichech yushalayim im lo alech yushalayim al rosh simchati. So I've got here a couple of interesting pictures. We know the minhag of breaking the glass. The chatan stamps on the glass. If you look in this picture from 1721 by Bernard Picard, that was a French artist who went around the world documenting the religious practices of the nations of the world. That's pagan practices, idolatrous practices, Catholic practices, Jewish practices, the lot. And he published a book of etchings. These are very helpful etchings from a Jewish perspective because they illustrate for us how things were being done at the time. So this is Cérémonie Nuptiale de Jus Portugales, which basically means the Jewish wedding ceremony. That's of Portuguese Jews. Wasn't in Portugal. Jews had been kicked out of Portugal then. This would have been in Amsterdam, probably. And you can see just about in the sort of bottom middle part of the picture, there's a dish there on the floor. And you can see the chatan, just behind the dish, is about to hurl the glass into the dish. So we stamp on the glass, but it seems that 300 years ago, the minhag was to hurl the glass into a dish. Now, that was in Amsterdam. They were very decorous in Amsterdam. They did things properly. The Germans were a bit more volatile. And if you look at the picture from Fürth, that's in Fürth, they had, you can just see there, I've circled on the wall, there's Mugging David there. That Mugging David is what's known as the Chuppestein. Chuppestein, is a Chupperstone. I think if you don't speak Yiddish, you can work out that Chuppestein is a Chupperstone. And the Minhag there in Germany, and if you look, Google Chuppestein, you need to spell it the right way to get the pictures. If you spell it the right way, you'll find these pictures of Chupperstones. And there the Minhag was not to throw the glass into a dish or to stamp it, but to hurl it against the wall of the shul. I know we've still got a few more things to take place, go outside the shul, the pagoda, pergola, whatever. So maybe we'll have a Chuppestein as well. And they threw the glass at the wall of the shul and broke it in that way. I don't think the US will allow it under health and safety now. Now, it's interesting, of course, because there's a dissonance when we break the glass. We all know, you break the glass and everybody shouts out, Mazel Tov. That's breaking the glass is Zeichel Churba. So we have here a tshuva of Rav Uziel. Rav Uziel was the first Rav HaRashi of the Rishon Tzion of Medinat Yisrael. That's Rav Ben Tzion Chai Uziel. And he addresses this question that he says it's not appropriate, to shout out Mazel Tov afterwards. As he says, if he was able to, he would stop the breaking of the glass. More harm is done than good. In terms of, you've turned something which is supposed to be Zeichel Churban into being the big Simcha. That's, you know, who can stamp on the glass, you know, the loudest? Which chatan, you know, the kids all want to crowd round the, you know, the chuppah to watch the breaking of the glass, to be an aid for the breaking of the glass. You know, that's the excitement of the chuppah. Big bang, everybody shouting mazel tov. He says if he could get rid of it, he'd get rid of it. But even Rav Uziel, he was the chief rabbi, and there were certain things that even he couldn't stop. That's, but he says, you know, really the chatan should be done. That's with matun, that's in a measured way. The chatan should say, you know, and it might be that, you know, we could format it a little bit differently. There shouldn't be that, you know, big mazel tov immediately afterwards. I always try to be makpid to wait a moment before I say mazel tov. If you look carefully on the videos, you'll see that everybody shouts mazel tov, and 3 seconds later, I say the mazel tov. They shouldn't think that I don't like them. I do like them. But zeicha l'churban, wait a moment for the mazel tov. We have underneath, we have some pictures. These are weddings. If you go to the Israel Museum, you'll be able to find these chuppah rings. That's the Jewish Encyclopedia Judaica. Again, go on the web, you can find these pictures. Now, these are our wedding rings. The problem is that if I allows one of these to be used under a chuppah, I suspect by the time even before I've left the wedding hall, I would have got a phone call on my mobile from somebody at the OCR raising with me that I used a type of wedding ring under the chuppah that I shouldn't have used, and they'd like to see me tomorrow. So why is it that, how is it they were used? Everybody knows that you use a plain gold band certainly with no stones, but also with no decorations on, for the chuppah. So how are they using these wedding rings under the chuppah? These are from the 16th, 17th century Europe. Did they not know the dip? So if we turn over to pages, whatever the next pages are. So I've taken here from Rabbi Sperber in his Sefer Minhagi Yisrael, the fourth volume. And he makes the observation that these weren't wedding rings at all. These are based on the requirement of Zeicha L'Churban. He says there are various manifestations Zeicha L'Churban for the Chatan. That's breaks a glass, Efer Makle on his head.
Doesn't this show that they kind of didn't know what the Bais HaMikdash looked like?
Sorry?
Doesn't this kind of show that they didn't know what the Bais HaMikdash looked like? Because they're all different.
Okay, we'll come to that in just a moment. We'll come to that in just a moment. We're not up to that yet, because we're still trying to work out what they're for. So we'll come to it. So he says, you know, that there's all sorts of things for the Chatan. What is there for the Kala? Look on the right-hand column. V'ulam ein siman l'zeche Yerushalayim etzel HaKala. There's nothing for the Kala. There's nothing for the Kala to do to remember Yerushalayim. So perhaps there was a minhag that the Kala would wear a special type of ring. This was a ring. This wasn't the ring used for Kiddushin. This was a ring that was put on the right hand of the Kala. And if you turn over the page, it says, the ornamental building worked on the ring always represents the Temple of Jerusalem or one of its more modern counterparts, a synagogue. And basically, he brings evidence that the picture is the model, as Yosef has said, is a model of the Beit HaMikdash. So the fact that they all look different, and they didn't know what the Beit HaMikdash, it's, you know, difficult, you know, to recreate the Beit HaMikdash exactly on the ring. So it doesn't matter if it doesn't look exactly like the Beit HaMikdash. It says over the course of time, the custom evolved. It started off as the Beit HaMikdash, and then it became a Beit HaKnesset, and then it became a house. So people thought it was representing a Jewish house. But the original minhag was that this was placed on the thing of the Kala, not as the act of Kiddushin, but by saying, Imesh kachech Yerushalayim tishkach yamini. And that was why the Kala wore it on her finger for the wedding ceremony to remember the destruction of Yerushalayim. Now, there are two types of Zeicha L'Churban. Till now, we've discussed the Zeicha L'Churban of how Yerushalayim has been destroyed. Rav Soloveitchik, on page 24, makes the observation, in actual fact, there are two types, that we have two models of Zeicha L'Churban. Some things we do to remember Avelut, to remember that Yerushalayim is lying in ruins. So it gives an example that Sfirat HaOmer reminds us that Yerushalayim is lying in ruins. That's why we don't say Brachav Shechianu over Sfirat HaOmer on the first night of Sfirat HaOmer. However, that's benching Lulav every day. That's, according to Chumash and the Mishnah, that was in the Mikdash they benched Lulav every day, and the Gvulin only on the first day. However, Rabban Yochanan Zakkai made the takana after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash that we would bench Lulav every day of Sukkot, Zeichel HaMikdash, so we would remember the glory of the Beit HaMikdash. And Rav Soloveitchik on page 24, I've taken this from one of the Haggadot, that people can look at it themselves. Rav Soloveitchik makes the observation here that we've got two types of Zeichel HaMikdash. Sometimes you remember the Mikdash by remembering it in desolation, and sometimes we remember the Mikdash by remembering it in its glory. And that's what we've got here with the next kina that we're going to read. Tzion Halotishali, page 152 in the Rosenfeld, 328 in the Art Scroll, 555 in the Koren. The final kina that we will recite is the kina for the victims of the Shoah. That sounds, of course, it's really fairly self-explanatory what we feel with regard to the Shoah. It's perhaps out of all the tragedies we commemorate on Tisha B'Av, it's the one that we're most able to identify with, most able to understand, and don't really need to speak too much about it in the Kuntras. We're running out of time, so we won't go through it inside, but I've chose this year an account of a selection in the Kovno ghetto, that's where they were presented with the challenge. This is, I've taken it from Martin Gilbert's book, and people can read it over the course of the day. But he describes how in the Kovno ghetto there was a selection and which Jews were going to be taken off to be executed. And the Jewish Leadership Council there was given a number of passes that they could give out work permits that would keep people alive. And they were faced with the very difficult challenge, moral, ethical, halakhic challenge, of who do they give them to? Are they entitled, are they allowed to make this decision of mi yichyo mi yamut? By giving out these passes, they're essentially saying that people who don't get the passes are being selected to go and die. Are they allowed to make that decision? If you think of the moral pressure that must have been on their shoulders and on their minds and in their hearts at that time, that's it's equal in many respects, I suspect, to the pain of death of those who suffered as well. And I've also brought here, that's on the very last page, a tshuva for Rav Ephraim Oshri. Rav Ephraim Oshri was a Rav in the Kovno ghetto, and he actually survived. And he relocated after the Shoah to New York. There's a Rav, I think, on the Lower East Side. Got here his obituary from the New York Times as well. He paskened many, many shilas in the ghettos. Questions that don't come up every day of the year. Questions that Rabbonim hope they'll never, ever be asked. Four or five volumes in Hebrew, condensed into one volume in English, Responsa from the Holocaust. Some people might have that volume. And he has here the question, in advance of the selection in the Kovno ghetto, he was asked, what bracha should people say just before they're about to be murdered? In terms of what's the bracha of the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem? Is it Al Kiddush Hashem or is it L'Kadeshet Hashem? In actual fact, the conclusion that he comes to is based on the Shla, which is the connection, Nusach of the bracha, is Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, Asher Kiddushanu B'mitzvotav V'tzivanu L'Kadeshet Shemo Barabim. But the truth is, for our purposes, the exact Nusach or text of the bracha is unimportant to us. Can you imagine addressing that Shaila and asking that Shaila, and the sense of inevitability that must have gone through the mind of the person who was asking the Shaila, to know that you're essentially facing certain death, and to have the Yishuv Hadat, to have the sense of mind to be able to ask the Shaila, I would say simultaneously both tragic and heroic. And I think perhaps that actually sums up the Shoah. That's the Shoah is both tragedy and heroism. In Israel, they talk about Yom HaShoah, the proper name for Yom HaShoah, the formal name is Yom HaShoah V'Hagvura. And the reason why they call it Yom HaShoah V'Hagvura is because it took place on the day of the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. And it's a big debate in the religious community in Israel whether it should be Yom HaShoah V'Hagvura. In terms of, is that the Gevura of the Jewish people that they fought back? Or is in actual fact the Gevura of the Jewish people, even those who were led like sheep to the slaughter, that was also Gevura. It was also heroism going to their deaths, many of them still believing in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as we're going to say in the Kina that we're about to read, that they went with Shema Yisrael and Ani Mamin on their lips. It's true they were led to death. It's true they didn't fight back, but that was also Gevura. And I think the whole story of the Shoah is tragedy and Gevura at the same time. And it's appropriate that we should end our kinot today with the kinah for the Shoah, because it really shows that the Shoah is not something that we see in isolation. On the one hand, it's a continuation of everything that's happened beforehand in terms of Jewish suffering. And it also shows that the Shoah and the Churban Beit HaMikdash are things that we talk about in one breath. They are equal tragedies to us in slightly different ways, but in many ways in the same way. It's Beit HaMikdash as a building was destroyed. It's not just the Batei Knesiot of Europe that were destroyed, but it was the soul of the Jewish people that was almost destroyed. So as I say, it's Shoah Ugvura, it's desolation and heroism. And just to bring to your attention again what I said in Shul yesterday, that if you didn't have a chance yet or you haven't seen it, those pictures on the internet of Batsheva Ovitz, age 104, in Yerushalayim, she celebrates her 104th birthday this month, that she was in Auschwitz, liberated, I think, from Belsen, maybe from Auschwitz or Belsen, I don't remember which, that went to Haifa, built a family. She wanted for her 104th birthday to have all her descendants and their descendants and their descendants with her at the Kotel in Yerushalayim. They did that this month. There's a picture there. 400 of them, they don't know exactly how many of them there, at the Kotel HaMaravi. And if we talk about Shoah Ugvura, you don't have greater Gvura than that, and greater proof to us that the vision that Rabbi Akiva had when he went to Har HaBayit and he laughed when he saw the fox running around in the ruins of the Beit HaMikdash, his certainty that Am Yisrael would survive and thrive and be rebuilt, testimony that that will happen is in that picture which you can see of Batsheva Ovitz. But we're going to finish our kinot by reading together the kinah for the Shoah. Eicha tifarteinu meirashenu hishlachta, eicha panecha mimenu histarta.